Yama Malian Galga, Jennifer Mills here, host of Tracy Leone, a podcast where we use today's voice to let yesterday talk and really unpack those stories that we've been holding on to for years. Now, first up, let's acknowledge the traditional guardians of the land on which we stand. And for me right now, that is the Tharawal people, which is near Robertson, New South Wales in Australia. Now, second up, let's make sure that you are in a safe place and that you'll be able to access someone trusted after this podcast, either in person or by phone, just in case our conversation, you know, brings up some present or some old wounds. And thirdly, but just as importantly, I use the F word quite often, the F word and the C word. So if you aren't comfortable with swearing, I mean, I don't use it in every sentence, but it's going to come out and, you know, I'll probably do it without warning. So if you're uncomfortable with swearing, probably not the best podcast for you, or be prepared for it. Probably not great to have the kiddies around either. All right. So today I'm going to take you back to 1977 or 1978. Anyway, I was in grade four at Wynnum Central State School, a typical suburban Australian primary school where most kids had been in the same class of kids since grade one, excuse me, me included, and where the community had, you know, dads working, mums at home, and all of us trying our very, very best to be part of whatever the hell normal was for suburban Australia. So on this particular day, the teachers had us all very, very excited, because she was involving us in a cooking activity, which was pretty cool for a group of 10-year-olds, right? Now, better than cool for me, because I didn't always get to eat breakfast that often, and I didn't always turn up with lunch, so, you know, the idea of cooking, right, had me salivating. Now, when I say the teacher had all of us involved, I have to give credit here where credit's due. She really tried hard to ensure that all of us, right, I guess, I don't know what to say, 23 kids, 20 to 23 kids, would participate in some way in the enterprise. And she even went outside of the usual suspects, right? So it wasn't chocolate crackles or, you know, cornflake honey joys that we were putting together. We were going to cook Russian caramels, right? Now, there were people who gathered the utensils. There were people who mixed the ingredients. There were special people who got to help the teacher, you know, with the boiling, et cetera, et cetera. Now, here I am, little Tracy Leone, desperately wanting to be the person who licks the spoon. Now, again, you know, credit where credit's due. The teacher didn't actually allow anyone to do that, although I am dobbing David Ransom in because, you know, the teacher might not know it. And you know what? For the life of me, I can't remember what her name was. But I think it started with an H. But when she put the spoon in with the utensils, you know, for someone to wash, David Ransom did try to go back in when she had her back turned. Anyway. So sorry, Dave. Okay, 45 years later, I'm dobbing in. Now, I was not the popular kid, all right? I was the absolute opposite of whatever the fuck popular meant at the time, okay? And we'll get to the why and how of that, you know, in future podcasts with my stories. But to suffice to say that I was afflicted with a bowel complaint, all right? Now, in the 1970s, if you had accidents, it was apparently related to your moral character, not some, you know, biological thing that was, you know, not quite right in your body. So all the kids called me Johnston Jams, lovely kids that they were. Anyway, so the teacher wasn't going to put me in a group activity because no one wanted to work with me, right? So I'm given the job of the second transportation, right, of the tray with the cut up pieces of Russian caramel to the fridge, you know, in the teacher's lounge. Okay, so, you know, we would have taken it to the fridge the first time to, you know, when you're making up those slices, you know, you've got to harden them up a bit before you cut them. So that's the first trip. Second trip, you know, is taking it back to the fridge or cut up. And of course, the third trip would be when it all comes back and we all get to eat it. Anyway, so that's what my job ended up being. Now, she didn't tell everyone at the start what all of our jobs would be. Right? We just hung on waiting to hear our name being called. And as the minutes progressed and after the mixing, right, I was getting a little bit anxious because, you know, I don't want to hear my name, you know, called out now. So at the start, I wanted to be the one, you know, that licked the spoon. Once we got past that and no one was allowed to, right, I wanted to be the one that had the shitty job of washing the bowl. Because the thing is, right, if I got that job, that meant that I got to lick the bowl. Now, remember, people, I'm 10, right, and I'm hungry, all right? So anyway, So the caramel's brought back from the fridge and it's cut into pieces, blah, 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 you know, and we're almost at the end and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to be the one that, you know, gets to do the dishes. Anyway, I hear my name called and it's like, oh, right. So, you know, begrudgingly, I start to do this delivery. Now, to put this in perspective, right, if you've gone to primary school in Australia, public primary school, they all look exactly the same, right? The main building looks exactly the same, okay? Now, I only had to go three classrooms to get from our classroom right to the teacher's lounge, so very short distance, right? So begrudgingly, tray in hand, I sat down the hallway for the tray's next journey. Now, I'm walking slowly, and I'm thinking of the gooey caramel, you know, that was in the bowl, and how it's dripping down the spoon, you know. And then I look down at the tray and the pile of pieces and how they, you know, weren't really placed in any sort of pattern. So if I took one, no one would really notice. So I picked one up and I put it in my mouth and it was beautiful, right? Can I just say, even today, my most favorite lolly in the whole world is Russian caramel. Anyway, back to the story. I took another one, and then I took another one, and then I took another one. Not in any hunger-induced rage, but slowly, methodically, hypnotically, right? When I arrived at the teacher's lounge, three classrooms away, the tray was empty, right? Three classrooms in, and the tray was empty. Now, I had no idea what to do. I was 10, right? I had no idea what to do, so I did nothing. I just stood there, right, with this tray in my hand, progressively panicking about what would happen when the bell went and who would come in and all those sorts of things. Now, I must have been a while because after what seemed to me like only a few minutes, the teacher came in through the door and I stood fast in preparation for yelling, you know, or for worse, because back then they still occasionally, you know, whacked you on the bum, even though they, you know, weren't supposed to. But, you know, the funny thing is that she didn't say a word. She gently took the tray from me. Now, I'm not sure where it went, right? And I felt her fingers and a handkerchief, you know, like wiping the caramel, you know, from my cheek. I couldn't face her, right? So I was like turned away. That's just what I felt. And then she said, back to class now. And she never mentioned the incident again. Now, the next day, right, I wasn't sure what to expect as we were all supposed to, oh, hang on, have a cup of the tea. The next day, I wasn't sure what to expect as we were all supposed to enjoy the tray of sweets for morning tea. Now, I'd figured out that the teacher mustn't have mentioned the incident to anyone, as my parents never said anything, you know, when I got home. And my classmates would have still been bullying me and calling me names if they got wind of it, right? So at around 10:30, I became a little bit anxious as I watched the student with the final job, right, of delivering the sweets, right, walk in through the door. Now, I don't know if the teacher bought them or made themselves the night before or, you know, what was going on, but when that student came in through the door, right, there was a huge pile there, right? Pieces were piled atop each other and it was placed on the desk at the front of the room and everyone ran up to grab the piece of sugar heaven. Everyone except me. I was livid. I looked straight at the teacher. Right, she was collecting her accolades for a job well done because, hey, when you're 10 and the teacher gives you an activity of bringing lollies in, mate, that teacher's the best in the world. Now, at the age of 10, I didn't know what I was feeling, didn't have any idea, but I knew it couldn't be calmed with melted butter and condensed milk. Now, if I had to ask you, right, without too much thinking, if I had to ask you to pick the most significant part of that tale, right, I reckon the majority of you would say, oh, the teacher forgave the student. How lucky for that little girl, right? And what a great teacher, you know, going and making, you know, another batch on her own. That would be the typical assumption. Well, I can tell you that the actual influence was quite, quite different. That encounter supported all the other stories, right, that I was a poor, stinky, hungry kid who could never become anything of value. Now, that teacher, in about 3 seconds, assumed that I ate all of the sweets on my own. That was the only fact that she got right. I wasn't granted an opportunity to explain if I had help, if I accidentally dropped them somewhere, why I was hungry, okay, and, of course, how the hell a skinny, underweight 10-year-old could possibly eat that much food. She took for granted certain assumptions, and those assumptions, in place of my own voice, were used to come to a conclusion. Yet another decision supporting the story of who I supposedly was. Now, for a very long time, and I'm talking years, right? So my opinion was that I was so pitiful that adults couldn't even be bothered rousing on me anymore, right? That's what I got from that event. That I was so far gone that I was just not capable of taking responsibility for my own actions. Now, realities are organized and they're maintained through stories, right? Good, bad, or ugly, right? They're maintained through stories. What we tell ourselves and what we tell our children hits hard the most. This story was just one more stone, one more weight, one more conclusion that was building up an ever-growing pile that eventually, right, I would not be able to see over. Now, that's the story I got. And I've got a different conclusion for you as well, okay? And for any professionals out there, this is based on the process of reauthoring. I was a 10-year-old child trying to survive and I was hungry. One of the most basic needs of human beings. It wouldn't have mattered if that tray was bread, fruit, or pasta sauce, or even raw spaghetti, okay? I would have eaten it. Conclusion, child hungry, child eats. To believe that I lacked moral character or composure or basic intelligence was unhelpful and inaccurate. I was hungry and I ate food. And if someone, anyone, would have questioned why, maybe, just maybe, my trajectory would have just slightly changed. But instead, that teacher chose the easy route and just went along with the same story. Now, my survival strengths didn't end there. They turned up a notch the next day as well. Remember, I was talking about how I just couldn't eat. I couldn't eat the sweets. Something was wrong and I couldn't figure out what it was. It took an incredible amount of discipline not to eat the caramels right when they arrived for morning tea. I was 10. It took me years to piece this one together. But as an adult, right, if I feel that you are disrespecting me, I won't eat your food. And that was the very first time that it happened. The amount of parties and barbecues and family gatherings that I've been to where I've gone hungry is ridiculous and, of course, you know, not mentally or physically healthy. But the first time that I started to, you know, control my environment and fight back, even if it was, right, starving myself, right? That was a moment. That was a courageous moment, right? I recognized contempt and I was having absolutely none of it, even if I didn't know what it actually was. Now, the stories we tell ourselves matter. Regardless of how insignificant we might view a certain event or a person or the words that we heard, we didn't become the adults that we are through experiencing one major event, right? It was through thousands and thousands of seemingly small actions and persuasions that influenced us along the way. And you know what? It's never too late to revisit those stories, just like I did with you there. When you revisit them, okay, like ask yourself, what beliefs have you carried into adulthood that aren't really serving you that well? What are your motives for sustaining them? Where and who did they come from? And let me tell you, be very, very wary of everyday typical assumptions. Now, for me, I had to let go of the notion that other people knew what was best for me, that I wasn't capable of taking responsibility for my own actions. I actually let a husband, parent, child, friend, all sorts of different people make the call for a very, very long time, right, about what it is that I should do, you know, with my own life. And then I would complain because I didn't like the outcome, right? Don't get me wrong, the journey to this knowledge, you know, wasn't an easy road. But, you know, realizing it changed my life. When I went back and I looked at those stories, I could see that, you know, the story about the caramel was just yet another stone that was supporting this story that, you know, I couldn't take care of myself, which was just rubbish, you know, absolute rubbish. The stories we tell ourselves matter. Well, that's it for today, right? Today's episode, number one, was brought to you by Hobbaging Narrative Practice, my counselling, coaching and healing platform, where you can talk to me face-to-face in Robertson, New South Wales, or you can talk to me through Zoom and phone anywhere else in the world. All services are discounted for MOB. I'm a Yawalarai woman, which is a language that I use at the start and the end of this podcast. A transcript of this podcast is available at hobbijing.com.au/podcasts. Yalu Malia Galga, I'm glad you walked with me today.